Here's another edition of BayCare Health Systems podcast series, BayCare Health Chat with Melanie Cole.
Although living with epilepsy may seem overwhelming at times, the good news is that many people with the condition can live full, active lives. My guest today is Dr. Sanjeev Sahu. He's a neurologist specializing in epilepsy at BayCare Health System. Dr. Sahu, what is epilepsy? Please explain it for people that have heard this term but don't really know what it means.
So to explain epilepsy, Melanie, first I'd start off with probably explaining what a seizure is. And for those who haven't experienced one, a seizure is really a transient alteration in behavior, a motor or sensory phenomenon that is caused by an abnormal electrical brain discharge. And it manifests with people passing out and shaking or losing consciousness. Now, when someone has more than one seizure that's unprovoked, we coin the term epilepsy. So recurrent unprovoked seizures is what really epilepsy is. And that definition keeps changing. But in today's era, we even understand that a single unprovoked seizure with a good enough cause to have more seizures can actually be termed as epilepsy.
Are there certain risk factors or a genetic component to epilepsy?
So that's a very good question. And there are risk factors just based on the background population. There's actually two age groups that are more affected by epilepsy. The younger generation and the older populations have a higher incidence of epilepsy. And it kind of rallies down around the 30s and 40s. And the younger and the older populations usually have infections and strokes as the main cause, but the middle-aged people usually could have other varying causes, including genetics and sometimes substances and other, you know, acute changes in their life.
Are the seizures dangerous? Are there different types? And how would somebody know that either one of their loved ones or themselves are suffering one?
So seizures can be of several different types, and they're not always easy to recognize. First and foremost, you obviously have to have the right diagnosis and make sure that they actually are seizures. But you can have a focal seizure or a generalized seizure. But what we really mean is in a focal seizure, only a part of the brain is seizing, and therefore that person may or may not lose awareness. And in that situation, they may just experience an out-of-body phenomenon, or they may smell something odd or have a transient aura-like sensation. And that's difficult for other family members to recognize. It's when that seizure spreads a little more across the brain that they actually lose awareness, and that might manifest as a staring off or a lack of responsiveness to questioning, or maybe a lip smacking or some kind of automatisms that is odd but easily identifiable by family members. Now, when the seizure spreads to the bilateral hemispheres or both sides of the brain, that's when they have a generalized seizure and they tend to pass out, fall to the ground, become stiff, and they could shake and bite their tongue or injure themselves. And in that situation, it is definitely dangerous. If they lose awareness while driving or if they fall and have a head injury, obviously a seizure can be dangerous.
As long as we're talking about seizures, and before we talk about some of the latest treatments or the complications if you do get diagnosed, let's talk about seizure safety, because that's very scary for people who are watching it. And what do you want patients and their families to know about safety if a seizure does happen? What are some precautions, Dr. Sahu, that you encourage people to take?
Well, right off the bat, you want to make sure the patient is safe. So obviously, if they're driving and you happen to be the passenger sitting next to them, you want to help them pull off the road or take control of the car. If they're inside the home or outside, you want to make sure that their surrounding area is safe. So you want to lower them from a higher seat, maybe lay them on the ground, roll them onto the side. Try not to put anything in their mouth, because usually they go into a spasm and they can clench down, and it's dangerous to stick anything in between the teeth because you could lose the you know, you could end up injuring yourself or damaging teeth. So after about 2 or 3 minutes, the seizures tend to cease by themselves. And at that point, you can just calmly wait till the patient wakes up. But in the meantime, you can activate EMS, call 911, get help, and just do what you can at that point to make sure the patient is safe. Usually, CPR does not help in this situation because of the lockdown of the breathing apparatus, and you can't really blow air into a tight chest.
So what are some of the complications? If you're diagnosed with epilepsy, how does that impact the quality of life? Driving privilege, you mentioned driving or employments, even the psychosocial aspects of this condition.
So I think it's an excellent question. And this is such a important disorder. It's such a disorder that affects you on so many levels that you can just understand that if you lose driving privileges for 2 years, which is the current law in Florida, it would be hard to commute to work, to any errands, meeting people. That itself is a major social impact. In addition, many people get depressed. They tend to stay at home. They try to socialize less. Economically, it affects their employment. Most employers shy away from having someone with seizures frequently in their workplace. So I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. And in addition, we know that patients with epilepsy tend to have a higher mortality. There's something known as sudden death in epilepsy. They could have a seizure in their sleep. They could injure themselves while driving. They could injure themselves simply at day-to-day activities, cooking, taking a shower, and the hot water is running. They could get burnt. So there's many things that can occur because of seizures.
So what are some of the latest treatments, Dr. Sahu? Are there newer medications that are available? Do they help with reducing the frequency or the amount of these or the severity of the seizures? Tell us about some of the treatments available.
So we really have some very, very good options, and some of the newer medications out there, they all perform very, very well. I think if somebody has seizures, the chances of us controlling their epilepsy just with medications alone is in the range of 65% to 70%. So most patients will be controlled with some of the anticonvulsants out there. And we have 20 plus different types, and we tailor them to the specific kind of patient, depending on what their situation is. Are they planning on pregnancy? Are they older, younger? There's different medications depending on the type of seizure classification. And you can titrate the dose so that it actually works better with minimal side effects. Sometimes you can use a combination. Now, in addition to medications, sometimes patients will not respond despite a trial of 2 or 3 different anticonvulsants in good enough combinations at good enough doses, and they fall into a category known as medically refractory epilepsy. You do not need to keep trying the next 10 or 15 different anticonvulsants to see if they're going to become medically refractory. We have very good guidelines and studies to back up that after they fail the first 2 or 3, there's only a 2 or 3% chance that they'll ever actually be seizure-free on medications alone. And at that point, we start working them up to see if they're actually surgical candidates. And epilepsy surgery is something that we do perform here at BayCare and St. Joseph's. There is a dedicated epilepsy monitoring unit. We bring these individuals in. There's manpower that actually monitors them via video and EEG 24 hours for 7 days. And during this time, we can actually watch and collect data on the kind of seizures, where they're coming from. Are they coming from one side of the brain, from both sides of the brain? We can do higher level studies, nuclear SPECT scans, MRIs, and see if there's actually a foci that can be removed successfully to give them seizure freedom. And many a times, if they have temporal lobe epilepsy, we can get a cure rate of up to 80% off medication. So they can be cured of their seizures And we're talking of people who are refractory without this particular approach. So that's an option. And in those individuals that we determine have generalized seizures, seizures coming from the entire brain that are non-surgical, then we can sometimes place a vagal nerve stimulator, which is a device that goes underneath the chest skin and wraps around the vagus nerve and can provide a stimulus that will actually lower the seizure frequency. And that's quite effective too, at least a 50% reduction in their frequency. So we have options, and many newer options are coming out on a day-to-day basis.
That's absolutely fascinating, Dr. Sahu. How cool is that, what you're doing there? What role do diet and exercise play in treatment? What do you want listeners to know about behavior and lifestyle modifications and living a healthy lifestyle if they are someone living with epilepsy?
So, you know, I think that's an excellent question, too. I get asked this question so many times by my patients. What is it that we can do from a diet perspective that might help? And to be honest, there are diets out there that are specifically treatments, but they're hard to achieve. We're talking of the ketogenic diet, Atkins modified diet, and they're really diets that are high in fat and protein and low or minimal on carbohydrates. But that's usually something we achieve in small children who we can actually decide on what they need to eat. But it's hard to achieve in adults. And if you don't maintain that diet perfectly, you lose the benefits of that. So I would just say a healthy diet, just like any other individual, according to their background and according to their baseline diseases, if they're diabetic, diabetic diet, if they're hypertensive, a low sodium diet, anything that's healthy. And from an exercise standpoint, I would say that exercise is good for epilepsy. If they are involved in contact sports, that's the only thing that I would say they have to be a little careful about. They probably need to wear headgear. But in general, any sport, any exercise is beneficial for epilepsy. And there are many articles that suggest this.
So wrap it up for us, Dr. Sahu. And what an amazing guest you are. Such good, comprehensive information. What's your best advice for managing and living with epilepsy and what you can do for them at BayCare Health System?
So if someone has epilepsy or if you know someone who has epilepsy, I think the most important thing is to make sure that they have the right diagnosis. They need to see a neurologist who has additional qualification in epilepsy, and ideally an epileptologist, someone who can actually confirm the diagnosis, make sure it's not a seizure mimic. They can look at the type of seizures and according to that, tailor their anticonvulsant therapy, adjust the dose. And if after a fair trial, they find that they have medically refractory epilepsy, then they can take them to the next level and at least address all the possible options to bring them back to a seizure-free state and give them back their lives. And as always, I it's important to make sure that they follow up with physicians, that they are compliant with their medications. You never want to stop an epilepsy drug. You want to make sure that all the side effects are monitored, the levels are checked, and then the basics, going back to the basics, seizure precautions, making sure that the patient is safe, doing some day-to-day things that would make such a big difference, avoiding injuries, turning down the thermostat in your home so that the water temperature is not too high. So if you have a seizure in the tub, you don't get burned, avoiding tub baths when you're alone or swimming without supervision. If you cook, make sure you turn the handle inward so that you don't tip over the food. Use the inner hot plate if you're cooking. And then this is a logical common sense thing. Stay away from heights. Don't get up on ladders. It's something that can be easily managed. It has a treatment and a possible cure. You need to get to the right person. We are out there to help you, and there are many resources that will help.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sahu, for sharing your expertise with us for this very important topic. You're listening to BayCare Health Chat, and for more information, please visit baycare.org. That's baycare.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.